A lot of people tell me they want to buy an Apple Macintosh, but they or their employees are already using DOS. That's no problem, I tell them. This program allows you to run DOS software on an Apple Macintosh. I know, it's a tragic waste of machinery, but you can run DOS on an Apple Macintosh. Come into Kemp's Office Center Connecting Point for a free demonstration and see how you can have two completely different computer systems for the price of one.
Hello, and welcome to the Colcast, the best 30-plus minute Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. I'm your host, Erfan Elijah. Joining me, his new book, The Cult of Mac 2.0, will be a book your grandchildren will love because it likely won't be available until they're in their late teens. Leander Caney is here. Also joining us, well, Vladimir Putin has a pic of him riding shirtless on a horse. Buster Caney is here.
Oh, hey. Yeah, I heard V-Lad. He digs my chest pubes.
Well, it even gets sexier when you... when you're on a horse, for sure. Leander, we haven't asked you about this in a while. When is your book coming out? Is there any update on that thing?
Well, we started submitting chapters, but then there's a backlog. I've got to edit a bunch of chapters.
Okay, so it's progressing.
It's progressing. Yeah.
Okay, are we going to see it in this millennium?
Hopefully. Okay. Yeah, thanks for reminding me.
What about this decade?
I feel super guilty about it now, but I'm going to get right on it this afternoon.
Okay, good. I'm looking forward to that. And for those people that don't know what I'm talking about, can you give us the 30-second elevator pitch on what the new book is going
to
be about?
Right. It's an update to Cult of Mac, which came out in the early 2000s, and it sort of documented Apple culture in the late 90s and early 2000s. Mm-hmm. And so, we want to do an update of it. Where's Apple at now? And of course, it's totally different, right? Apple was very in trouble in the late 90s, early 2000s. And now it's completely different. The world's biggest company, technology leader, millions and millions of fans all around the world. So we're trying to do an update on Apple culture around the world, looking at, different countries, different groups, a whole bunch of stuff. There's a whole bunch of people with a whole bunch of Steve Jobs tattoos after he died, that kind of stuff. So we interviewed them. And Dave Pirin has been the main reporter, done a really nice job. Profiled a whole bunch of really interesting people in the Apple community. And we're pulling it together. Hopefully, we'll get the book out this year.
Documenting the really cool, but also sometimes very strange stories.
Well, yeah,
because there are people who are super hardcore. I mean, the cover, at least of the first book, was that guy who had the Apple logo shaved
right.
in the back
yeah,
of his
yeah,
head.
Yeah.
And that was a real dude, wasn't he?
Yeah, yeah. Well, it was based upon Peter Cohen, who is a writer, on the East Coast. And every year when he went to Macworld, he used to get an Apple. An Apple haircut, an Apple icon haircut, and shaved into the back of his head.
Really?
So yeah, it was based on him.
We gotta each get one of those and then go to Disneyland together. What do you guys think about that?
I'm gonna get the reverse one where they stick some hair on my bald head.
That's right. You gotta get like that Ron Papil can of spray paint hair. Oh, we'll
stencil,
get you a stencil.
Yeah. Okay, good idea.
It's gonna look great. Totally natural, I guarantee you. Well, we, of course, are going to be covering all the stuff that Apple released this week, and we'll run through it, pretty quick. I wouldn't say it was the most exciting of announcements, but we did get some significant updates, so we'll talk about that. We're going to wrap up the show with an all-new Under Review, where we are going to talk about our favorite gadgets and or apps, and I've got a pretty hot item this week that I think Buster... You might really like this, so you're going to want to stay tuned.
I'll probably tune out once that segment hits, but I'll toss in some oohs and ahs for you.
That's okay, yeah. That's all I need is some mindless oohs and ahs will work fine. Before we do the news, let me go ahead and say thank you to Blue Apron for supporting this episode. Incredible home cooking has never been more attainable thanks to Blue Apron, because for less than $10 a meal, Blue Apron delivers easy-to-follow seasonal recipes along with pre-portioned ingredients right to your door. There's no overspending on restaurants or high-end grocery stores. With Blue Apron, you can prepare delicious, memorable meals for yourself in under 30 minutes. I've had several Blue Apron meals now. They're delicious, but I think what I like about it most is you actually, if you like to cook like I do, but you don't have the patience or the wherewithal to actually go seek out new recipes, you end up learning how to cook recipes in genres you never would have found yourself. I mean, you'll be cooking Asian dishes. You'll be cooking Spanish dishes. I mean, you name it. They have different recipes every single week, and they don't reuse the same recipes throughout the year. So they have lots of variety. So it will teach you how to cook as well, because you can save the placards and cook these recipes in the future if you'd like. Some of the recipes that are coming up in March include salmon.
Salmon.
A delicious salmon piccata and orzo and broccoli, pork chops and miso butter with bok choy and marinated apple, vegetable chili with baked bean, sweet potatoes, and crispy tortilla strips and spicy shrimp, coconut curry, and cabbage rice. Check it out and get your first three meals free. Your first three meals free. So there's no reason to not check it out at blueapron.com/cultcast. blueapron.com/cultcast. Get yourself three free meals. Oh, before we do the news, can I just relive a moment I had this week? Apple Pay literally saved my ARSE this week. Buster, I think this happened to you several months ago where you left home without your wallet.
Yeah.
And you needed gas.
Paying at the pump.
Dude, that's exactly what happened. So I left my house. I was in a rush. I was on my way to a dentist appointment. And on my way there, my reserve light comes on. And I was like, oh no, I don't have my wallet with me. So I had to figure out a way to get gas. And it dawned on me, oh, I have Apple Pay. And at this point, I was running on fumes. I was like, if I don't make it to a gas station in the next 10 minutes, I'm probably going to run out. They stopped at two, and neither of them had the equipment to accept Apple Pay. And so I searched on my phone what to do to find Apple Pay gas stations. And I found this Reddit thread where this exact same situation had happened to this guy. And thankfully, to the magnificence of the internet, he posted this thread to Reddit. All these people started commenting and giving him suggestions. Isn't this amazing?
Yeah.
And one of the persons was like, you need to download the Chevron app. It will show you exactly which stations take Apple Pay. And one of the other guys was like, I don't know, sometimes those apps aren't right. So I downloaded it, took me right to a station, and it didn't have the Apple Pay thing on the gas pump. So I went inside, and I was like, do you guys take Apple Pay? And the guy was like, what? Like, a lot of people don't even know what it is. And I was like, can I pay with my phone? And he's like, oh, yeah. And he churns down this little sign on top of his credit card machine that was hiding the contactless pay station. So I tapped my phone, filled her up, and I made it home without having to push my car all the way home. So thank you, Tim Cook, for saving my arse, because I would have had to get towed or something. I mean, what are you going to do? All right. Was that exhilarating? Did you guys find that entertaining?
Story.
There was downs.
I didn't know if you were going to make it. Right, I know. It was wild. Really,
did you think I was going to end up having
really
to push it?
Yeah.
I know. I'm probably not supposed to tell you this, but I've been approached by Paramount about the movie rights. And I'm not sure who's going to play me. Maybe Jack Black. We'll find someone entertaining. And this is going to be a three-part movie. It's going to be a trilogy. Yeah. And the third movie is going to be split into two parts. You know how they do that now? It's like they can't just have the trilogy. Like, the last movie has to be split into two movies so they can really milk that team of all the cash they can. Yeah, it's going to be exciting. But let's move on to some Apple news. Let's talk about what was announced this week. So, high level, we got some new iPads. We got some new iPhones. And we got a new app called Clips, which I found to be somewhat strange. before we talk about the app, let's just run through the news on the hardware. So the iPad has come full circle. It's now called iPad. I think this is hilarious. And also, it really just demonstrates that Apple doesn't really seem to have any set naming conventions on their products. It's totally confusing because they went from iPad to iPad 2. Then they went to the new iPad. This is like the new Coke. And then they went to iPad with Retina display. And then was the iPad Air, the iPad Air 2. And now we're back at iPad. Buster, would you be so kind as to tell us about the new iPad?
It's cheap. That's like its killer feature. Super cheap.
Yeah.
$329.
For 32 gigs.
And then it's got like a new processor and some stuff like that. Brighter display.
It's but it is really inexpensive. It's meant to pull in the people who have not bought the iPads because the price was too high. As Buster mentioned, $329 for 32 gig, $429 for a 128 gig. They put in the A9 processor, which debuted in the iPhone 6S, so really not a very big increase in power there. It uses an unlaminated screen, and even though it's brighter, that unlaminated screen contributes to more weight and more thickness. So the iPad is 7% heavier than the iPad Air 2. It's 20% fatter than the iPad Air 2, but the screen is brighter, and it goes on sale Friday, March 24th. You know what I didn't really like about this story is Apple is pushing us into the higher-end iPads now, right? So now there's a low-cost iPad, and there's a high-cost iPad, and there's nothing in the middle. So if you don't want to buy this new iPad, which is really basically just a big iPhone 6S, you're going to have to spend the extra money to buy the iPad Pro. And I don't need all the bells and whistles in the iPad Pro. So now, do you want to spend $329 on the iPad, or do you want to spend
Then do you need more bells and whistles that comes on the current iPad? Because I really don't think that I do. More storage would be better, but like you're saying, it's just a big iPhone. So unless you need like pro features, then I don't think it's that bad. I think it's pretty solid.
I don't need it. I need the most powerful.
But you don't really need the most
powerful. No, I don't really. Yeah. You're right. But I need it.
Yeah.
I don't think I could go with the new iPad because it's too similar to my iPad Air 2.
Oh,
so God. Maybe in a year or two, it might be, if they update it more regularly, then maybe it will be appropriate. But at this point, I'm like, well, this thing's almost exactly the same as my iPad Air 2. Why spend the extra money? What do you guys think? I mean, what about that 10.5-inch iPad that we've been talking about? There is rumors they're going to announce it next month in April when they debut at the Steve Jobs Theater. Buster, do you still think that's a possibility?
I don't know. Yeah, it would be kind of unprecedented for Apple to... I don't think they've ever, like, done that with, like, a small iPad update and then, like, a... Or, like, a small MacBook update and then, like, brand new MacBooks, like, a month later. I don't think they've done something like that before, have they?
Not that I can recall. And it would be weird of them to just do an iPad event. There needs to be something else there, I would think. Like, they're not going to hold an event just for an iPad.
Dude, you know, the official debuting of Clips.
That is going to be really exciting. There's going to be a lot of people who can't wait to get their hands on that. Well, as long as we're talking about it. So, Clips is this app that Apple's releasing. It's like a photo booth app, right? It's supposed to be kind of fun.
Yeah.
It's geared towards the kids. And I got to say, I'm a little confused about why they decided to do this, because
I think that's a good comparison, though, like the photo booth app from Mac.
Like, so it's just supposed to be fun.
Yeah. Where, you know, I can't see people using this seriously, other than the one thing that is cool on it is the live tiles, where it animates your captions as you're saying stuff. So that's kind of useful. Other than that, like, all the other stuff can be done in other apps.
Okay, I'm not trying to be a hater, but those live captions that you mentioned, what's so cool about those? So when you're speaking into the video, the app will take those words that you speak, assuming it can actually understand what you're saying, and then turn those into like an actual subtitle over the video.
Sure,
Why would you want to do that?
Well, because a lot of times when you share videos like on Instagram or YouTube and stuff, Facebook, people don't want to watch it with the sound on because, like, you know, you're at a restaurant, you're on the subway, you're with hanging out with friends, and that way you can still see what the video is about with the text overlaid on it.
Right. I heard somebody else make that same reasoning, and I thought they were just joking, but is that like an actual thing? Like, people watch videos on silent mode so they want to be able to read the text?
Yeah, me too.
Really? Yeah.
No, me too. You know, more often than not, I won't turn the sound on, but I will sit there and watch the subtitles and read the subtitles.
Right, same.
Why not just turn the sound on?
I don't know. You know, it's
well, just because like sometimes you don't want to be loud. Like, you don't want to be that guy who's like, oh, playing like, you know, and some big stupid hip hop song comes on and you're just blasting it, you know, in the DMV.
You just want to see the lyrics of the hip hop song with the musical notes on the outsides.
Well, no, but like, say you're like, well, I mean, not necessarily a hip hop video, you know, like you're watching somebody else's video, like a movie they made an edit. And then, you know, everybody always has music soundtracks and stuff. You don't know if somebody's saying something important. So if, like, something important needs to be said so that people understand what's going on in the video.
Right, exactly.
It's really nice to have captions on it.
Yeah, it makes all the difference because it's a commitment to turn to watch a video, and it's a commitment to turn.
It's a commitment to watch a 10-second video.
It is because it's a time commitment.
It is. It's time.
If you're scrolling through a feed and a video comes up and it looks kind of interesting, and then it has subtitles, you can watch it for a few seconds to get an idea of whether you want to commit to watching the whole thing. Yeah. So the subtitles really helps you with that decision.
I guess when you're scrolling through Instagram and you see a video, I mean, you've got maybe a second to grab my attention before I'm like scrolling past it.
Right. Yeah, precisely.
So you got to make those subtitles interesting if you want to hold my attention. Well, that's news to me. I always just turn the sound on and watch the video. We've really come full circle watching those silent movies on Instagram with the captions. So people, instead of actually expressing their emotions, they can just make faces. And then have the screen come afterward with text, you know, explaining what's happening in the plot. We're back in 1912 here with Apple's Clips app.
Yeah.
Well, the app can do a whole lot of other stuff, too. It's a social app, which kind of always makes me a little leery. Apple doing social has not worked out very well thus far. But it helps you share videos on social, and it helps you create videos. You can combine video clips and photos and music into your videos and share them through, you know, different social avenues like Instagram and Facebook. And you can splice in soundtracks, and that will automatically repeat. So it will give your video, like, you know, some underground music or some background music, rather. And here's some interesting things about the app. You guys tell me if you think this will actually be useful. So the app will recognize the faces of the people in your videos if they have been tagged in your Photos app. And it will suggest that you share the app or share the video with those specific people. If you speak those people's names and those names are in your contacts, then the app will figure that out and it will suggest that you share the video with those people as well. So it can identify your contacts essentially and then share the video with those contacts without you having to do a whole lot of anything. Hmm. And this kind of reminds me, we were talking about that workflow app that Apple just bought before we started recording. And Lander, you were saying it does a whole lot of stuff that no one actually ever needs to do. And it kind of reminded me of that. It's like you can create like all these scenarios where the app will do things for you. But in my mind, I'm like, well, can't you just do these things like in a second by yourself? Do you really need an app to figure it out for you? It doesn't really seem like it's useful.
Yeah, right. Maybe. I haven't played with it yet, but it's not interesting. You know, like that appealed to me. I didn't see that it wouldn't be totally useful. It would be quite helpful to be, you know. I like it when Apple does all the data detection. Like in an email, it looks, you know, if there's an event, it'll detect that. If there's an address, you know, it's easy to add to the address book. I tend to find that kind of automation really useful.
I do too. Like. That specific automation, I feel like, is really useful. I just wonder how many people actually have faces saved in their Photos app and how many people actually use their Contacts app to keep track of contacts. I feel like I've abandoned both pretty much.
I do.
Do you really? Buster, do you use it?
Not really.
Lander, I'm guessing it's just like your kids and your family and their faces that are in there.
I think there was some came over from Facebook or something like that. In fact, it's messed it up. It's got all the wrong faces on them. Some there's some guy that I haven't talked to him for 20 years. His face is on about half my contacts.
You're like, who is this guy? Why does he keep showing up in all my apps?
And I'm too lazy to go fix it.
Well, that's exactly why I don't use it, is because it takes effort to train it. And as a wise woman once said, ain't nobody got time for that.
Right.
And so it's just like this huge dump of faces that are in different states of maturity. You know, it's like the same person's face will show up in five different icons because they just look different now. And the Photos app can't tell who that person is. Mm-hmm. So you have to go through and like merge them all together. And it's like, dude, I'm not trying to do that. It takes way too much time.
Yeah. I did a bit of training early on when the Photos app and to get some faces. And I thought it worked pretty well.
It does work pretty well. It does work pretty well, but it's not seamless. And if it doesn't just do all the work for you, there's this great book that was released a long time ago about web design by this guy named Steve Krug. And the title of the book was Don't Make Me Think. And I really feel like it has to get to that point for people to actually use it. It just needs to be absolutely seamless, smooth, in order for people to actually adopt those workflows. For most people, I'm sure there are people out there that don't agree with that and will go through and do the work. But a lot of people, I feel like, just don't have time for that. So Apple's building on these features that I wonder if anyone actually uses. In any case, the app comes out in April. It will be compatible on newer iPhones and iPads running iOS 10.3. So we'll see how useful it is then. Let's see here. So the iPad mini got updated. It's still the same price, but you get more storage for free now. So the 128 gigabyte model now starts at $399.
And it's more expensive. There was a story. Does that make sense that it's more expensive than the
new iPad? It's stupid. Yeah.
It does seem a little weird. And there was a story on Cult of Mac that said the new iPad 4 gets more storage, but it's still a total ripoff. And I was wondering if you guys thought that was true.
Well, yeah, because it has the old specs inside, too, still. So they didn't even upgrade the specs. So it's just more storage, right?
I feel like they should have made it $299.
Yeah, I would have
like that for the smaller iPad. I mean, if the big one is $329 and maybe given it 64 gigs of storage instead of 128. Although, what was it before? Was it 32?
Yeah, I think it was 32.
It probably was 32. It's been a little while since they've updated it. But I feel like they should have dropped the price. Having it be more expensive than the iPad is weird. But I am glad that they didn't discontinue it because I really love the size of the iPad Mini 4. The iPhone SE, still the same phone, but is now available in 32 and 128 gigabyte flavors. And the prices are still the same, $399 and $499. And then the big news, the iPhone 7 Red product.
Oh my gosh.
Which I thought looked absolutely comical, goofy.
You didn't like it?
Slightly hideous.
Oh.
I liked it. Didn't you, Buster?
The only thing I like about the product Red phone is that it donates money towards AIDS. People with AIDS. That's the only thing I like about it. I'm not a Red guy. I just don't like Red devices.
Yeah. Yeah, I wasn't a big fan of the Red. The color, the white face looks kind of, I don't know, I'm not a big fan of it at all.
It contrasts the red very strangely.
Yeah, but I also do think even with the black face, it doesn't look that much better either. I agree,
even with the black, it doesn't look good.
Yeah, it doesn't look good, period. I just don't think red's a great color for it.
And I think like the color of the red it looks like a red aluminum foil.
Yeah.
It just I don't know, for me it just doesn't do it. But I bet you this thing's gonna sell like crazy.
I doubt it. It's more expensive than all the other colors. Why would you buy the ugliest phone for more?
Well, I don't think it's actually more expensive. There's just no 32 gigabyte option.
Yeah. So again, you have to pay more, like if you want the red color.
Yeah, you do. But people, I mean, they go nuts for new colors. That's the only reason why I think it's going to be popular, is because it's new, and the new phone always seems to sell the best.
Yeah, I don't know. I'll wait a few months and see if I ever see any red iPhones in the wild, but I doubt I will.
Well, everyone's going to put a case on it anyway, so.
It's true.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter.
Well, people are complaining that it wasn't glossy as well, right? That they didn't like the matte red.
Yeah.
They wanted a glossy red. I think it looks really nice. I think it looks really attractive.
Do you?
I like the white on the front, the white contrast.
I do think that the back would have looked a lot better if they would have made it glossy. Like a jet red. A jet red would have been the hotness. All the new hip-hop artists would have been carrying it. They would have been wearing them.
Murdered out. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Well, if you want a product Red iPhone 7, it's available in the 7 and 7 Plus. It will also be available at 8:01 Pacific on Friday, March 24th.
Doesn't the timing seem weird? How come they didn't release this when they released the iPhone 7 back in whenever, you know, last year?
I think, kind of like Airfan's saying, it's good to like just drum up interest, new color. Ooh, maybe that'll get a couple.
It was planned because it's, you know, they're gonna be coming out with the iPhone 8 in a few months. So
right.
Well, right. That's what I was thinking too. This is such a bad time to buy an iPhone. If you buy this, you're going to be outdated in 6 months.
That's why I think they should have made it cheaper, like slightly cheaper than the other models, you know? But people say I'm crazy. I mentioned that in like my article, and people thought I was crazy. But I think if Apple made it like $50 cheaper than the other colors, then people would be like, oh yeah, that would be a great reason to upgrade.
And you get a cool color. It would really sell like crazy.
Yeah, exactly. I think it'd sell like bananas. I'd even think about buying one.
Really? I thought you'd be like the color.
Yeah, but I could put a case on it or spray paint it.
Oh, because you don't have an iPhone 7.
Yeah, I have a 6S.
Right, you still have a 6S. Okay, that makes more sense. Yeah. If they made it cheaper,
but how are they gonna make a phone that donates to charity cheaper?
Well, yeah. Okay, but it's like Apple has so much money. It's not like Apple couldn't just donate money to charity and
It's about the people that buy it, isn't it? I think someone who is motivated to buy this, I think, isn't going to be that price sensitive.
But I've never thought about the Apple product red devices and thought, oh, I should get that one because it's going to go help people in Africa with AIDS. You know,
well, that's because you're a heartless.
That's because you're a heartless bastard.
That's true, but it's also like, I don't know. You're kind of like commercializing charity work at the same time. It's just,
well, right.
You know, kind of silly, I think.
Well, I think what you said is exactly why Bono was partnering with companies to sell commercial products,
uh-huh.
because he was like, you have to integrate it into capitalism in order for this to be effective. Which is, I think, one of the reasons why red products are so brilliant, because
you don't
have to be buying it to want to make a contribution to charity. You're buying it because it's a great product, and you also feel good that it's donating some part of that money, which I don't even know how much it is. Is it like 5% or something?
Yeah, it's a really small amount. Like the amount that Apple has generated for red over the last couple of years, I think last time I remember it was like $50 million or something like that.
I'll just look at the press release. 130 million, they say.
Okay. Oh, okay.
And they say they're the largest corporate donor to the Global Fund.
And that's nothing to scoff at. Certainly, it's not very much money for Apple.
Right.
I mean, that's a lot of AIDS drugs that buys. So, regardless. So, I mean, you buy it because you want to have a cool red product and you get to have the feels afterwards because you're like, I did something good today by spending $1,000 on this phone.
Yeah.
So,
I did something great for myself.
You with the buyer's remorse.
Yeah, right.
For buying an iPhone 7 midlife cycle. So you want one. The prices are the same, but there is no lower tier option. Like Buster was saying, you have to get the upper end 128 gigabyte model for $749 or $869 for the iPhone 7 Plus 128 gigabyte model. So, not a huge exciting week for Apple announcements. We got some new watch straps as well that I forgot to mention. And we got some new cases.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of talk about, you know, like the fact that they rolled this out, the new iPad, as a press release instead of having a special event. And there was like some reading between the leaves, tea leaves, you know, sort of saying that. This shows how much Apple cares or doesn't care about the iPad and that it's a failing product because they just like putting it out in a press release now.
Mm.
But then someone else pointed out, you know, that Apple sells more iPads than Dell sells computers.
Wow.
And, you know, this is clearly aimed at like the sort of bulk buyers. This is the education iPad, right? So they're hoping to go against Chromecast and all the Chrome notebooks, Chromebooks.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which I thought was a good point. And I saw some, you know, people like Fraser Spears, who's an education in Scotland, you know, and active on Twitter. You know, I think he was positive about it. It's definitely one for the, you know, sort of institutional buyer rather than the individual buyer, I think.
I saw somebody on Reddit make an interesting comment. I'm not totally sure I agree with it, but he was saying because Apple has basically dumbed down the iPad and lowered the price, they're making an admission that people don't want pro iPads, and so they need to make this thing cheaper in order for people to start buying it again. What do you think about that, Lander?
Well, yeah, but, you know, that's kind of true. I think it's definitely true for the institutional buyer, you know, and I think this is definitely what it's aimed at. This is Apple's education product. And price is all important.
It is all important, and I'm sure schools will buy more of these now that they are significantly cheaper. I mean, well, the iPad started at $499, so this is a huge price drop if you think about it. But also, it is an interesting point in that Apple released these iPad Pros that I've never felt are actually pro machines. And I wonder how well they're actually selling. Apple now is focusing on, we got to make these things cheaper. So let's just, you know, have this thing have a moderate upgrade in tech. Doesn't need to be as thin or as slim or as lightweight as it was. And we could drop the price on it. And I wonder if maybe people just aren't buying the iPad Pros now because you can't really do anything pro on an iPad Pro.
I don't know, you know, like you said, when you were trying to decide which one you want to get, you know, I think for the individual buyer, you know, who's going to be using an iPad for, you know, for something more than just watching movies and checking Facebook, you know, you're going to go for the Pro, because this one is just a little bit too bare bones. But if you're a, you know, budget buyer, a student, you really can't afford to get anything else, you know, this is actually quite a lot of computing power for not a lot of money. I mean, if you think about it, a few years ago, you know, what could you buy for $300 in the world of computers? You know, nothing but the cheapest, crappiest netbook.
Oh, that's a good point. Those were all you could get for $200 and for
people,
sure.
And people go on about the Chromebooks, but, you know, the low-end ones are really junk.
Yeah, they're garbage.
And people hate them. I mean, people end
I don't
up
even think
hating.
They exist as a category anymore.
I think there's, you know, I saw some graph, and I think they're selling, you know, they are selling well to education buyers, because, you know, the school districts, right, they want to get these computers for the schools. They have fairly, you know, the budgets are, you know, they got to stretch the budget as far as they can. And they have to keep on upgrading this stuff every few years, you know, so I think they're always looking for the cheapest machine. And I think this makes Apple competitive in the education market. You know, it significantly lowers the price, especially if you're buying, you know, hundreds of thousands of these at a time.
Do you guys ever listen to or watch, I should say, iJustine on YouTube? Mm. You guys know who she is, right?
I know who she is.
Yeah, she was talking about the new iPad in one of her videos recently. And she was talking about the iPad Pro and saying, I really wanted to use the iPad Pro as a laptop replacement, but it just doesn't have a real operating system that you could use. You know, like all the complaints that you and I have made, Buster.
Yeah.
And she was like, I would edit videos on this thing. It would become like my portable laptop, but it has such a simple operating system. You can't really use it in that capacity yet. And I would love to see Apple have the iPad and then the iPad Pro and the Pro line really be more fine-tuned for professionals and have more features, maybe even a completely different operating system that has a file system that you can access and actually be used as a laptop replacement. Because if they took the 9.7-inch iPad Pro and it already has the keyboard, the great keyboard, and they allowed you to – this is going to be sacrilege. This is going to be blasphemy. I hope you guys will forgive me for saying this. I've said this before, but I'm going to take it even further – that you could connect a mouse to it and boot up a version of Mac OS and actually drag and drop things and access the hard drive. That would be an exciting product to me. Buster, do you agree?
Well, I think it doesn't need OS X. It just needs iOS features that are more like desktop rich.
iOS Pro.
Yeah.
Copyright 2017, Erfan Elijah. Can I copyright an Apple trademark just by altering it slightly?
Right. You can always register a domain name. I mean,
there you go. iOSPro.com. That is all the iPad and iPhone news we got this week. We'll see if Apple has more news for us in April. Again, I want to reiterate there was a rumor that we're going to have an April event at the new Steve Jobs Theater. And if they did that, I would expect that we will get the 10.5-inch bezel-less iPad that we have been talking about and has been rumored for quite a while now. And hopefully, maybe, possibly, we might even get some new Macs. Now, that seems crazy because we haven't really heard any Mac rumors, but I was thinking back to when we got the new Mac Pro, and we didn't hear a peep about that thing. When it came out, we were all totally surprised that Apple had kept it a secret as well as they did. So maybe we'll get a new Mac Pro. Maybe we'll get a new iMac. Maybe we won't. I'll leave it to you to decide. Let's move on, though, to the last segment of the show. This is an all-new Under Review, where we talk about the stuff that we're currently reviewing. Buster doesn't have anything that he's currently reviewing, so he's just going to listen and judge
pass.
Our submissions.
Yeah.
Ooh, Judge
this
Buster.
This is going to be so exciting. Oh, I can't wait.
And tell us what he thinks of the things that we're reviewing. Leander, you said you had bought something. Oh, you bought a new CarPlay stereo.
Right.
That you're testing out.
Yeah.
I'm really interested in CarPlay stereos. I want one really bad. I think they are the way forward for all car manufacturers. I hate those proprietary crappy interfaces that car manufacturers build in. I think they should all just give up and hand over the area to Apple. How do you like your new CarPlay stereo?
Well, you know, so far it's a mixed bag. Like you, like I'd wanted to get one forever, and it had to be an aftermarket radio. So there was a bit of a delay. Remember that for the aftermarket ones?
Yeah, for sure.
And they kind of came onto the market like last year, I guess. And the entry level price was sort of right $600-700. So on Black Friday they had a Pioneer one, which is Pioneer obviously is a really good brand, for $299.
I think I almost bought that same one.
Well, you and everybody else, because it looks like this was a really popular model. It's like the cheapest CarPlay. It's like the entry level CarPlay aftermarket stereo. And
what model is it? Do you know? Do you
well,
remember?
I have to look it up. It's called the SPH. Sorry, I should have been prepared.
The SPH. I'm gonna get close here. I'm just gonna make it up, and I'm sure I'm gonna be close. The 27.H50 2PHO.
I got it here. It's the SPH DA120.
DA120 rolls right off the tongue.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, and I think it's like $399 from Best Buy now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's weird. It's supposed to be fairly bare bones. But it's got every connection under the sun on the back, two USB ports, HDMI, all these kind of analog in and out, as well as like this cable nest. And I went to Crutchfield and I bought a wiring kit, a mm-hmm. wiring harness. Mm-hmm. And Crutchfield makes it seem like, oh yeah, you pop out your old radio and you put this wiring harness between the old wiring and new wiring. And it's,
yeah.
And it's, if you can use a screwdriver, any idiot can do it. So I thought, okay, yeah, I'd probably be done about 20 minutes. It'd be really easy. Anyway, it took up the entire weekend and then two nights of this week. It was a giant headache. I almost gave up and took it to the stereo store because I couldn't figure it out. Eventually, I did figure it out, mainly by looking at all the wiring. You had to look at the wiring diagram for the stereo and then the wiring diagram for the car and the wiring diagram for the harness and figure out, which ones go where. I'm also hampered by the fact that I'm colorblind, so I couldn't tell the colors of the wires. So I had to get the neighbor's kids, like 9, to come and tell me. And they were looking at me like I was like some weirdo, yeah, that's pink, that one's red, that one's blue. But eventually I got it to work, and it's weird, because the normal interface is your usual horrible old, car stereo interface, hopelessly complex.
Yeah.
All these really bad nested menus. And then you got CarPlay, which you can only get if, and here's the thing I don't like about it initially, is that you can only get it if you turn off Bluetooth. So you have to specify how your phone connects to the car, and it can only be one or the other. It either has to be plugged in with CarPlay, or it has to be Bluetooth. So you have to switch. You have to switch between the interfaces. In other words, the old car stereo had Bluetooth, and as soon as I got in the car would connect. The phone would connect to it.
Yeah, that's so what my car does.
I could leave my phone in my pocket. I didn't have to plug it in. Any of that kind of stuff. So now, I got to plug the phone in to get to use it, which I find.
Wait, you can't connect it via Bluetooth?
You can, but you've got to turn off CarPlay. Do you understand?
Wait. So you can't. So Bluetooth isn't compatible with CarPlay in this model.
You can't use. Yeah, you can't use them both at the same time. Either you turn off Bluetooth connectivity in order to get CarPlay connectivity, or you turn off CarPlay to get Bluetooth.
That's completely strange. I know. Why would it work that way?
I don't know. It's completely bonkers.
If you turned off CarPlay, what would the stereo? How would the stereo work?
Well, you could connect through Bluetooth.
Okay, and then you're controlling everything on your phone.
Yeah.
Oh, so it turns your phone into the interface for the radio, essentially.
Well, using CarPlay, it does. But you can do it. Like I used to do on the old stereo. It's just like you connect to Bluetooth and you take a call. When a call comes in, you hit answer on the stereo and it plays through the stereo speakers. And if you're playing music, you couldn't really initiate music from the old stereo. You had to initiate it on the phone. But once you started playing music, you could jump to the next track, or you could rewind to the beginning of the track, that kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
And I think it had some playlist functionality, which was always too complicated to get into. So you can do that on this one, but you can't use CarPlay. So you have to go into the settings, you have to dig down a couple of menus, and you have to choose, how do you want to connect your iPhone? How do you want to connect your smartphone? Do you want to do it via CarPlay, which means you have to physically plug it into a cable that I have, strung out from the back of the stereo, you have to turn that off and choose Bluetooth.
Yeah, that is annoying.
It is annoying. It's crazy because you don't always want to pull your phone out of your pocket to connect.
You never want to pull your phone out of your pocket,
right? Well, I never used to until I was, unless I had to charge the phone in the car.
Okay, well, all that aside, how do you actually like the CarPlay aspect of it?
Well, you know, it's got like, it supports about six, you know, I think it's probably about 8-10 apps. Mm-hmm. You know, it supports the Apple stock ones, phone, music, mapping, messaging.
Did you say Apple stocks?
Well, the Apple stock ones, you know, the Apple stock apps.
Gotcha. I'm like, is that what you need to be doing in your cars, yeah, checking right. your stocks?
Checking your Apple stock, yeah. And then like, you know, it supports about, I don't know, 4, 5, maybe 6 third-party apps, mm-hmm. which mm-hmm. is crazy. You know, like one of them is Spotify, and I don't think Waze is one, but, you know, correct me if I'm wrong. I think you can get Waze, but you have to use they have a proprietary app interface. Mm-hmm. Pioneer does. So you have to download some Pioneer app, and then you can load up more apps onto the screen, not using CarPlay, using whatever their proprietary smartphone integration is. Mirrorlink? Mm-hmm. Does that ring a bell? Is that right?
It doesn't ring a bell for me.
I didn't get into this yet. So that actually seems more useful because Waze is actually the better mapping app, especially in the city, because it does real-time traffic.
Dude, Waze is... I'm going to try not to get off on a tangent here. Waze is great, isn't it? It's unreal. Out of all the mapping apps that I've used, Waze is the only one that is actually able to figure out how to get you out of traffic and keep you moving.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And in real time. And Apple's Maps is horrible. You know, like every time I want to go somewhere, it wants to put me on the freeway here, which is like a parking lot. Yeah. So you just, you get on the freeway and on-ramp, and then you come to a dead halt, and then you sit there for an hour. And like, you know, I know all these back routes in San Francisco now. And so Apple's Maps is completely useless in the city here because it does not choose the right route ever.
It's wrong a lot. And it's every time we have this conversation, I always have people tweet me and they're like, I don't know what you're talking about, dude. It's always 100% accurate for me. And every time I use it, it ends up getting me lost.
Right.
Yeah. And I end up having to get out Google Maps. Right. You know?
Yeah, yeah. So I'm interested in saying Waze, but then you got to use this other interface, which I think you can use through the Lightning cable. It's actually kind of, I think the Android connectivity is actually better on this than it is the Apple stuff. Mm-hmm. Although I haven't dug into that yet. But I don't know, kind of a mixed bag right so far.
Wow, I was expecting you to be a lot more enthusiastic.
Well,
about
me too.
This.
I was really excited about it. I thought it was going to be really awesome. But there weren't that many problems to solve, really, to be honest. You know, like I like to take phone calls in the car, using Bluetooth, and I like to. I like the idea of it. But, you know, I don't see that it actually solves that many more problems. And I haven't even used Siri yet. Like, I really want to try Siri to load up music and to add to text and things like that.
Don't even go there. Don't even try it.
So I'm really curious to see that. I'll report back in a week or two, you know, like about how that works.
We'll know if it didn't work because Leander Kinney will be dead. Getting furious at Siri, not paying attention to the road, driving off a big cliff. Yeah, I really want to love it too. I think it's the future of cars, and I as I said, it's the most streamlined, beautiful interface that I've seen proposed, and yet, and I'm excited to get a car that has it. But clearly, they still have some quirks they need to iron out of it. It's still, I mean, it seems like it's a hobby for Apple. At this point.
It's weird because CarPlay, you know, like it made a big splash, and it seemed like it was going to be the hot new thing, and then I haven't really seen that. I don't think it's been updated. That much, and definitely the number of apps that they've approved for it is really anemic. You know, there's not that many. Mm-hmm. I know that they're very conservative and they don't want people watching videos and watching porn or something like that while you're going ahead. So you gotta be kind of careful what you can put on it. But even like with the number of music apps, I don't think it supports Spotify, as far as I know, is the only one. I don't think it supports Tidal or some of the others.
Mm-hmm. Just not being given a lot of attention. That's a similar story for a lot of Apple products and marketplaces, right? I mean, the router, the Apple Apple Watch apps, Apple TV apps, like those marketplaces are really languishing, and they just kind of seem to exist, but Apple doesn't seem like they're passionate. Giving them much attention. Yeah, for whatever reason.
Right.
All righty. Well, my pick. Well, not my pick. One of the items that I'm reviewing right now is called the Think Tank HeliPack V2 Backpack. So some of you may know, I got myself finally a DJI Phantom 4 Pro drone from Amazon after having to order like 4 different ones because they kept sending me ones that people had stolen and returned.
Dude.
And I... got an email from the guys at Think Tank, and they had this new backpack, and I was like, try it out. What am I going to keep my Phantom in, right? So this backpack shows up, and it is as big as a small automobile. It's the biggest backpack I've ever seen in my life. What kind of car do you have, Buster?
A Fiat.
It's as big as your Fiat.
I can put people in the back. It's ugly.
Ginormous.
I thought you said I was going to be stoked about this pick.
Well, I thought it would be cool for a drone backpack. Hold on. I started off with the bad thing. Okay, but I don't think this is actually Think Tank's fault. Think Tank makes really wonderful camera bags. In fact, they're probably one of my favorite camera bag companies. The problem is the Phantom, it has a fixed height. So the thickness of the backpack can't be less than the height of the Phantom 4 Pro because you can't take the legs off. So they're forced to make this large backpack. That said, they make really good use of the space. You can fit a ton of crap into this thing. You can fit the remote, which is ginormous. If you ever held a Phantom 4 remote, it's almost as big as the drone. It's comically large. And you could fit probably 8, maybe even 10 batteries in this thing if you were creative. The batteries are huge as well. You could fit a full-size laptop, I think up to a 17-inch laptop, into the compartments. So they really make use of all the space that you get. And I don't really know what other people do out there to cart around their Phantom 4, but you kind of have to have a backpack, I think.
Yeah.
Buster, I'm imagining you just throw your Mavic into like a fanny pack or something.
Yeah, and I met this guy this weekend while I was out droning with a buddy, and he had a Phantom 4, and yeah, he had a huge backpack.
Isn't that sort of antithetical to the whole point of having a little tiny drone, a portable drone?
Well, this is not a tiny drone. The Phantom 4 is it's more of a photographer's drone. So you're trading size for really wonderful image quality. Whereas the Mavic, the one that Buster has, is more towards, I don't know,
practical people who are
hiking, people who are out and about. Yeah, exactly. Because you could toss, how do you carry yours around, Buster?
I toss it in my backpack.
Yeah, so it just goes in your backpack.
Or you can put it in a fanny pack, like, which is what's great about it, because then you can put that plus like 4 batteries and it's like nothing. It doesn't even weigh you down.
But the image quality is that of a cell phone. I mean, it's using like a cell phone camera sensor.
Yeah, I mean, it matters what you want. I mean, if it's worth putting a big-ass drone in a big-ass backpack and lugging it around like a dork, then Think Tank's backpack is for you. Go with that Phantom 4.
I feel like in order to complete the look with this backpack, you have to get really long socks, pull them up like past your calves, and you also have to wear flip-flops of some kind, you know, like sandals. And then you have to wear a white t-shirt and khaki shorts. Okay. You have to go full-on dad mode to really make this thing shine.
Yeah.
But I mean, again, if you have a Phantom 4 and you want something that holds a lot of stuff, is super protective, and doesn't have a bunch of really tacky embellishments, this is probably one of the best backpacks out there. It is expensive. It's $200, so it's certainly an investment, but like all the other bags that I've had from Think Tank, it is absolutely solid, really well built, really well thought out. There's a lot of compartments that can be customized to meet the equipment that you have, but it is definitely an investment, and you will look like a dork carrying this thing. Definitely. There's just no way around that. And then you bust out your Phantom 4 Pro, and everyone's like, oh, yeah,
that's
I thought that
cool.
guy was a dork, but he's a total G.
Yeah.
Buster.
Yes.
This is not Faves and Raves, but if you had to pick between mine and
I don't know. They both sound horrible. I have to struggle all weekend with a car stereo or look like a dork. Awesome suggestions.
I will throw in a free pair of long calf socks.
Oh, okay.
And open sandals.
Yeah, okay.
Did I convince you now?
I think I'm going to go with the CarPlay stereo.
Okay, well, you've made the wrong choice, but such is your rights. Let's go ahead and wrap it up there. That's all the Cultcast we have for you guys this week. But if you want to come tell us what you think about the new iPhone 7 product red. Or do we get it wrong? Do you want to yell at us? Twitter's the place to come let us know. I'm at AirFun, Buster's BST3R. Leander is L. Caney. This has been the Cultcast, the best 30-plus minute app conversation you're going to hear all week long. New episodes of the Cultcast come out every Thursday night. I want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll see you guys next time. Good emphasis on that.
Oh, yeah, next next time.
Right, yeah, yeah. That's really got to turn it around. For the,
come back next time.
Yeah. Yeah. Really, very authoritative.
He's really changing
on that.
Things up. Yeah. 10 minutes of flying it, I'm going to be super bummed.
Hello.
Hello, Governor. Can you turn your volume down a little bit there, Leander?
Okay.
Why is my British accent so bad? I keep trying, but I feel like it. I just can't get it.
I don't know. It's better than your other ones.
Is it? Yeah. Let me try a few different variations. Here we go. Hello, Governor. That's like the...
Oh, my God. Authentic.
Is it good?
Not bad.
Okay, and then there's the higher pitched British voice, which in my mind I feel like is like farther in the past, like people, you know, like when they used to like print newspapers and stuff. Hello, Governor.
More obnoxious my British God, accent.
You're insulting the voices of all Leander's friends. These are probably how all of them sound back in Britain.
All my friends are Yankee Doodles now.
They are, except for your bro.
Yeah.
Yankee Doodles.
And he doesn't really like me that much, so I can't.
Well, it's only because he knows you.
Right.